Recordings have started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the Review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms, RPMs, and All GTLDs PDP Working Group Call, held on the 29th of March, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? And Jay Scott, I have you noted, but I know you'll be joining on the Adobe Connect shortly. Anyone else? Hearing no further names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Jay Scott Evans. Please begin.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Jay Scott Evans, for the record, chairing today's call. Understand that we had a very productive meeting, 4.5 hours of meetings, actually, in Copenhagen. I want to thank everyone for their time and effort in those calls. That has resulted in some additional work and some updating on our timetable and things we discussed today. And also, I believe, a change to the timing of our calls from our usual 60-minute calls to perhaps going to a 90-minute format and then some instances 120-minute format. I guess the first thing we're going to discuss today is sort of our plan for completing the charter question. And I think Mary sent around some information earlier today in the table format that had a variety of information regarding the charter questions and our progress to date. Mary, could I ask you to summarize what you sent around for the group, please?
Hi, Jay Scott. Hi, everyone. Mary from staff. Jay Scott, I sure can, but in the meantime, I see that Kathy has her hand raised. So would you like to take a comment now?
Yes, thank you, Mary. I've asked Mary since I'm not on, this is Jay Scott Evans again, since I'm not on Connect right now, to let me know if people have their hands raised, because since I'm not on Connect, I can't see that. So, Mary, thank you. Kathy, would you please?
And Hi, Jay Scott. This is Kathy Kleiman. Apologies, that was a mishit button. Back to you. Thank you.
Okay. So, Mary, could you give us a brief summary of the table that you sent around earlier?
Sure. And hi, everybody. This is Mary from staff again. And for Jay Scott and others who are not yet in the Adobe, the document that was sent around is now being displayed in the Adobe Connect room. And essentially, what it is a listing on the left-hand side of all the 16 Trademark Clearinghouse Charter questions, starting with Category 3, going through to 6, and then going back to 1 and 2, as you have seen if you've looked at the document. Then in the next column, for each of the 16 questions, at least for the ones from categories 3 through 6, there are some proposed next steps from the co-chairs who I should note, I think, have not had a chance to discuss all of them, but the status of where those proposed next steps are has been put into the second column. So, for example, in the first question, which is question 7, about how do I handle, you see that right next to it, there's a proposed next step with a recommendation. And in the column next to that, there are notes that staff has also added in based on the discussions on those charter questions in Copenhagen. So, Jay Scott, essentially we think that the document is fairly straightforward and self-explanatory. We know that it was sent out 24 hours ago, so presumably we can go through this again. But I think the idea here, and is to see if we agree on either closing some of these questions or if there are any follow-up, what those are, and if there's going to be additional discussions, whether to have those now or to postpone them until review of a sunrise and change. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. So I can't see the document, so I'd be happy for someone to lead us through these questions and find out, you know, and go through the recommendations. I do think it is imperative that we identify questions that we can close out, given the GNSO statement to us, to try to help conclude our work as quickly as possible. So I think it's, you know, good that we start closing out things that can be closed out and focusing on those things that we need to continue. I'm discussing so that we can concentrate our work and become a little bit more efficient and hopefully more effective. So with that, is Mary, could you tell us what, I can't see the first question, so if somebody could lead us through what the first question is, if there are no hands raised.
Hi, Jay Scott. This is Mary again. And folks, I apologize for the poor audio earlier. I hope it's better now. I think I located the problem. So the first question here is from Category 3, which is scope. And the question is, how are design marks currently handled by Deloitte, the TMCH provider? The note from the chairs is that we still have some forthcoming information from Deloitte, because as you recall, we asked them a specific follow-up question about this topic. So the recommendation is that we should have more discussion on this after we get some further discussion from Deloitte, the note being here that this is still a very active point for discussion. The staff note then adds a few bullet points based on Deloitte's presentation of the updated data that we also sent around when they met with us in Copenhagen, that tries to explain how the verification process works for design marks, or as they call it, I think it's a device or figurative marks or image marks. So, J. Scott, I don't see any hands raised, but perhaps I think the question here is whether working group members feel that this is something that we should keep discussing, but perhaps not until we get some further information.
Okay, thank you so much. I would agree with that. I think that we have a lot of information. We do know, in fact, that they are taking device marks, and I think that was as confirmed by their own website, but also confirmed by the presentation received in Copenhagen. But I do think we gave them some examples and ask some additional questions. I think it would only be fair that we allow them to answer that before we conclude our discussion on this and formulate a recommendation. Do I hear any, is there any disagreement with that plan? I take it there's none, since I'm not hearing that anyone has raised their hand or that there are any disagreement. So that would be the recommendation, is to wait until we get that response from Deloitte with regard to specific additional questions we've asked, and then bring that back up and put it on the agenda for discussion once we get that information back in. Okay, Mary, let's move to the next.
Certainly, Jay Scott. So everyone, this is Mary again, and please let me know if my sound is So the next question is question 8, which deals with geographical indications, protected designations of origin, and protection appellations. And the note here from the co-chairs is that this has also been an active area for discussion, and we did have some discussion about this in Copenhagen as well, where there was also some participation from community members, including the United States Patent and Trademark Office representatives who were there. So this is noted in the co-chair's proposal and the staff notes. The recommendation from the co-chairs is that this would require more discussion. One question that the staff had for the group, and we developed this question based on the Copenhagen discussions, is that wasn't me.
I'm sorry, Mary.
Noting
that was a train.
Noting that there are really three categories of submissions into the Trademark Clearinghouse. There's registered trademarks is the first category. That's court-validated marks as the second category. And the third is marks protected by statute or treaty. We know from discussions with Deloitte that for that third category, especially marks protected by statute and treaty, they do not also check if it is a registered trademark in any territory or jurisdiction. presumably because that is a separate category from registered trademarks. So that was kind of where the discussion in Copenhagen focused. And our question following from the co-chair's recommendation of more discussion is, when we look back at the three categories from the GNSO's recommendations, what do we mean by marks protected by statute or treaty? Did that also presume that there must be a registered mark somewhere that has to be validated? Hey, Scott, back to you.
Thank you so very much. You know, I guess my question to the group is more of a macro question. Do we want to sort of table all the discussions with regards to what goes into the clearinghouse and sort of tackle that all together? In other words, tackle this at the same time that we tackle the with regards to design marks or device marks and how they're treated, so that we can have sort of a concentrated discussion focused around one subject matter. What is suitable candidate for registration in trademark clearinghouse? And I've sort of put that to, again, understanding that I can't see hands right now, so I'm going to need some assistance if there's anyone who wants to discuss or has a comment with regard to my proposal.
Jay Scott still has his hand up.
Bill?
Yeah, thanks, Jay Scott and Mary. On this one, I think in order to expedite our work and that what we ought to do is engage in some triage here and eliminate the questions where they're not worthy of further exploration, resolve the ones that we can resolve now, and then set aside a third group where we're waiting for further information. So that's how I propose we go forward to expedite this process so we can move on to the RPMs associated with the TMCH database. On the specific question of these marks protected by statute or treaty, I hate to drag in the work of the other working group I'm co-chairing, the one on IGOs and curative rights process, but clearly in that one, there's a difference between having a trademark and having a name that's protected by treaty, but given that Deloitte's doing this now, taking these marks, which are probably in many cases of international organizations, and not checking the trademark, if we were now to recommend that they withdraw their ability to be registered in the clearinghouse and therefore have right to sunrise registrations and get trademark claims notices, I can imagine we might get some outcry from those groups whose marks are protected by statute and from the GAC. So I think that shouldn't be determinative, but it certainly should be a factor we consider if we're going to consider recommending that these marks need to have associated trademarks to remain in the database. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. Mary, are there any other hands?
No, there are not at the moment. Oh, I see that Greg Shatton has raised his hand, and I see also that Christine Dorain is typing in the Adobe. So, Jay Scott, do you want to take Greg's comment? I will
read
Christine's when she's done.
All right, Greg. Greg, are you there?
Jay Scott, Greg said he says he's just been cut off and he's trying to get back in. I noticed that there's a couple of points of agreement with what Phil has just said in the Adobe Connect room. Christine Dorain now has her hand up. Perhaps you can go to Christine and then Greg, if Greg is back in time.
Okay.
Hi, thanks. I decided from Amazon. I decided to stop typing. Yeah, I don't understand why we would combine the two, or why we would want Deloitte to combine the two, and I'm going to support what Phil just said. You sort of moot the whole reason for having a protected by statute or treaty category if you then insist that the statute or treaty category also has to have a registered trademark. Because if that were the case, they would have just gone in under that category. So I don't know that this requires a ton of discussion. I think these are completely separate buckets, can see completely separate ways of getting into the trademark clearinghouse. And if anyone, if anyone has any sort of concern with the idea of three separate buckets, I'd love to hear sort of their specific concern, because otherwise I think we're maybe just making a problem where there isn't one. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. Do we have Greg back?
This is Greg Chatton. I'm back on audio.
Okay, Greg. Yeah, Mary.
Two things.
I was just
going
to say that. Greg, let me just say really quickly that there were, I think, three people in the Adobe chat, Jay Scott, who agreed with Christine's comment.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks, Greg Chatton, for the record. First, I think that there is, you know, they're related questions about, the design marks and the marks, you know, whether the marks protected by statute or treaty are perhaps being misinterpreted. But they're kind of adjacent questions. I don't think they should be combined, but we do need to kind of consider them in relation to each other. Also, I think particularly with regard to the marks protected by statute or treaty, it's something we need to explore. And I'm not sure I agree with Phil on the, you know, the way that this is connected to whatever's going on in the IGO discussion. But clearly, what's important here is to get this right, or at least to achieve clarity on what was meant. And because it seems to me there may be some things that are coming in under marks protected by statute or treaty that are not, in fact, marks. And the question is not whether they are have registrations attached to them, but whether they fall under the category of marks at all. I think this was intended to be an alternative to registration as such, but not intended to be an alternative to having something that would be considered a mark. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Well, I am. This is Jay Scott Evans for the record. I tend to agree with Christine. Did I hear, Mary, you're breaking up. Did I hear you say Kathy has her hand up? Kathy?
Hi, Jay Scott. Hi, everybody. Thank you. This is Kathy Kleiman, and I agree with Greg here, but I had some points beforehand, so let me go through them briefly. One is Jay Scott's idea of combining this with design marks, or at least dealing with the categories of what's going into the trademark clearinghouse. That's fine. If we want to push this until we get Deloitte's response, that's fine. I was really struck by the fact that two members of the U.S. GAC from the U.S. Trademark Office came, spent their time, and joined us during our three-hour face-to-face specifically to raise issues about this question and say, wait a second, we thought, we as U.S. Trademark Office representatives, and somebody stop me if you think I'm mischaracterizing, we thought that the trademark clearinghouse was for trademarks. And here what Deloitte told us was that even if a geographic indication might be a trademark as well, they're not even looking at that. They're putting it in under some category of statute or treaty, which leaves me to the question of some category of statute or treaty, which interestingly enough doesn't go back to any of the recommendations from the GNSO Council or the ICANN board. What came from the GNSO Council and the ICANN board was trademarks go into the trademark database, the trademark clearinghouse database. So I'm with Greg, and if I'm mischaracterizing, I don't know what the meaning is of marks going in under statute or treaty right now, except that they don't appear to be trademarks. And so I think this is an important issue for us because it's one that could significantly expand what goes into the database. Right now there's only 75 marks as we understand it. But, again, if we don't get our hands around how they're defining statute or treaty, whose statute or treaty, and whether you have to be trademarks as well. So my thought would be to go back to, you know, to at least posit going back to the original recommendation of the GNSO Council, which was trademarks. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. What I hear from everyone, or at least from a few, is that this is something that needs further discussion. My point was perhaps the best idea would be for us to discuss this at the same time. I'm trying to get through this full list of 16 questions and finding out what we can close out, what needs additional discussion. So rather than devolving into additional discussion on the substance, What I want to know is it okay if we push our discussion on this, realizing there needs to be additional discussion on the points that Kathy and Greg have raised, to the time, to a time certain when we get the responses from Deloitte, and then at that time we'll discuss both. So in other words, table this and the question before. Is that an appropriate course of action so that we can move on and continue to get through the list of questions that we can decide what our timetable is?
Hey, Scott, this is Mary again. And there's some discussion in the Adobe chat as to what would be the types of entries that would be accepted, and I believe that would be within the 75 that Deloitte has reported they have. What would those be that are protected by statute or treaty but that are not marks or trademarks? There is also a comment that from Paul Keating to suggesting that we move forward for Phil's suggestion. So presumably, and he says here, to deal with those we can deal with and push the others. So my assumption is that that's very similar to what you've just said, that for this particular question, this is something that we might need to return to.
I agree. I think that that's determinative, and I'm going to take the chair's option and say that we will return to the substantive discussion on this. At the same time, we return to the discussion on our agenda with regards to device marks and how they're treated. We'll get the additional information from Deloitte. So with that, Kat, Mary, can we move to the next question?
Yes, and the next question is question 9, and we're still in category 3, which is scope. And that question is, should the trademark plus 50 be retained as it is, amended, or removed? The co-chair's note here is that this really hasn't been garnering much discussion at all, so the recommendation is unless something new is raised, that we can close this question for now.
Thank you, Mary. What are the thoughts of those in attendance today? Do we have any comments, concerns? I'm just about to join the Connect
Mary,
room, and I'll be able to do it. Go ahead, Mary.
Yes, Phil has typed a comment in Adobe, but he's also just raised his hand, so perhaps he can repeat his comment for the audio.
Okay, thank you, Phil. Phil?
Actually, Mary, this is Phil, for the record. My comment is not on this question of trademark plus 50. It was on something else, responding to another comment. On trademark plus 50, I think it's time to close this one out. I haven't seen any evidence or heard a lot of outcry that TM plus 50 is being abused. I believe the presentation from Deloitte indicated that perhaps 1% of all the marks registered in the clearinghouse were TM plus 50 marks rather than actual trademarks. So it's not being abused, but I haven't heard any suggestions it should be expanded. So we have to start cutting some of these issues out if they're just not worth further discussion. So I think trademark plus 50 is in there. It's being used to a minimal extent. I haven't heard any strong arguments for eliminating it or expanding it. So it's time to fish and cut bait on this one. I'd say cut bait and let's say it's done, and we can spend our time on the issues that require further discussion. That's my personal view.
Thank you, Phil, very much. I agree with that assessment. I think we've got bigger fish to fry, and we need to move on. We have seen nothing to show us that there's some sort of abject failure with it and the fact that it's being abused, and so I suggest we move on. I don't hear any objection to that. I'm going to say that that's the status of this, and we will now move to the next question. Mary, if I could get you to read the last one, and then I will be in, and I can take over leading us through the rest of the material.
certainly J. Scott. So this is Mary again for the record, and we are now at question 10, which is about the matching rules of the TMCH. The question is whether those rules should be retained, modified, or expanded, for example, to include plurals, marks containing, or mark plus keyword, etc. And the co-chair's note here is that there was some discussion on both sides, both to expand, I suppose, or modify and not to do so. The other note here is that this is part of the analysis that was done by the analysis group in the independent review of the Trademark Clearinghouse. So the recommendation is to hold this question until we've had an opportunity to either speak with the analysis group or to review their revised report that was recently released. J. Scott?
Great. Thank you, Mary. So I agree that we need to get to see that report, and we need to have them present to us. There's been a lot of work. They've considered it in depth, and I think it's incumbent upon us to give a nod to their work and take a look at it and see what their conclusions were. So that would be my recommendation. Do I hear anyone objecting to that? Okay. Let's. I see Paul Keating agrees with that. Let's move on now to, I think it's question 11, which is, should the scope of the RPMs associated with TMCH be limited? I'm going to have to expand to a full screen in order to read the document because it's very abbreviated in my Adobe. So should it be the RPMs be associated, be limited to the TLDs? And we see in the first problem, we've heard that this can be difficult, but we received the scholar's letter concerning this, I believe, right at the opening of the Copenhagen meeting, and I think that has been circulated to this group, and there has been some discussion about it, although not necessarily the substance of it, on the list. And we see here there's some concerns were noted over the lack of differentiation leading to possible expansion of trademark rights for trademark holders. It's difficult to develop general policies for differentiation, maybe possible only to be developed specific rules for summarizing claims, different types of GTLDs. So, I mean, I think this is an issue that still is going to require additional discussion. Get out of this once I've done that. So I think it's going to require a little additional discussion, especially I'm apologize. I can't get back out of the full screen. I'm trying to. Here it is. Okay. So does everyone agree that this requires? Does anyone disagree that this needs to have additional discussion? Is there anybody there? Okay, Kathy Kleiman, thank you for raising your hand.
Hi, J. Scott. This is hard. It's hard to try to figure out where everything goes. But let me suggest with this one that maybe we should bump this to the next stage when we're looking at the rights protection mechanisms of sunrise and trademark claims. You know, by its words, should the scope of the RPMs associated with the TMCH be limited? So the question's already envisioning that next stage. So maybe we could ask staff to bump this over so we can look at it in association with each of the uses of the Trademark Clearinghouse that we'll be evaluating.
Okay. That sounds like a reasonable position and way forward, Phil.
Yeah, I agree with Kathy. Personally, I don't support any expansion. I think it would just result in generating more claims notices, not in any use of the Greater Sunrise registrations. But on the substance, if the group wants to defer this for more discussion, that's fine with me.
Okay, thanks. Is anyone opposed to that idea? Seeing none, let's move to 12. So there's discussion about operational considerations, and you see the recommendation is to narrow this question to the cost only. And, you know, there's some thoughts that perhaps this should be, you know, question whether cost pricing and reliability is implementation rather than policy. And I think that's the position I've sort of advocated all along, is that I sort of feel like if we want to note that it came up and it was just that we felt like there were some issues that and concerns around that, but then we should throw that to the implementation working group to consider in more depth and offer a recommendation. We could know that there was a concern for this group and it was discussed and it was raised and we pass it to them. That would be my thought on it. I'm opening this up to the group now. I see that a note in Kurt is stated in the chat box, there was a fairly strong sentiment at the ICANN meeting that a single provider model was fairly strong. Mary?
Thanks, J. Scott. So I note also that to Steve Levy's question and George's follow-up comment after Kurt's comment, that my recollection is that at the time when the RFI was sent out, there were several interested parties in being the provider, and I believe that that was on the validation portion. So we're talking about Deloitte's role at the moment, not necessarily IBM's. Obviously, that was a few years ago, so we don't know if there's any additional interest. But I thought that would be helpful. And the other point is that the contract with Deloitte and ICANN at the moment runs for 5 years with a one-year renewal, consecutive renewal for 1 year thereafter, unless either party decides to terminate the contract. So, again, not directly answering the question, but hopefully some relevant information for everyone.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. Again, I think that the recommendation I would have for this group is that we make a note that there was question as to the cost and whether competition would lower that cost and whether a single provider model is necessarily the most efficient and effective for stakeholders. Then we pass that to the implementation team because they're the ones that deal with the implementation. But we noted in our report that it was brought up as a concern and then close this question out. Kathy.
Thanks, Jessica. We might also note when we pass it on to the implementation team something that Phil said in Copenhagen, which is that based on what we're hearing, you know, the service of Deloitte, the operational issues have been good, other than cost. So we might want to pass it on as well. That, you know, in general, we've heard good reflections. Thank you.
Okay. I think that's only fair that we pass on what we heard, Phil.
Yeah, well, since people have brought up what I said in Copenhagen, just to expand that a bit, generally no one's been critical of Deloitte's operation. They're getting high marks for that. We've got a battle of economic theory. Some people think that competition will lower the price of using clearinghouse registrations. Others think that it would just, given a rather small database, it would just introduce greater inefficiency and not reduce costs. And then what I did note, wanted people to understand in Copenhagen, is that we've got a lot of pressure on this group, hurry up, so we can get to the second round. Well, after we deliver our recommendations and after assuming council and the board sign off on them, there's an implementation phase. And if implementation would involve putting out requests for proposals for additional providers of clearinghouse services and then contract with them, that's going to introduce delay if people want that competition to be in place before the second round. So I just wanted to point out, I don't have a firm view on this question one way or the other, but I just want to point out that that's a consideration, the delay that might be introduced for the second round if there's a decision to go out and enter into more contracts with more providers before the round begins.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
So I see Jeff Newman has his hand up.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. Phil, you raised that point at Copenhagen as well, and I wanted to respond to that saying that I'm not sure that all implementation needs to wait until after every single bit of policy work is approved by the GNSO Council and then by the board, and hopefully the GNSO Council will respect the findings of these RPMs and then, I'm sorry, of these PDPs and not have separate debates on that. But I'm not sure necessarily that if there was competition or an RFP was introduced that you would need to have the vendor necessarily before you had applications in or started applications in a new window. There is a considerable amount of time between when you start a new round and when the first of those TLDs get to the point of delegation. You know, and competition could also be introduced on a rolling basis. So I think there's a number of alternatives. I just don't want to scare off people that believe that competition would be a good thing to lower costs, scare them off by saying that if we implement it, it's going to cause a delay. I'm not sure that's necessarily true. Thanks.
Yeah, and Jeff, Phil here, just in quick response. I wasn't trying to scare anyone. I was just trying to, you know, say it's something we have to look at. Would it affect the timing if there's going to be an effort to contract with more providers? I've just assumed it wouldn't stop some aspects of a second round, but I assume that rights holders, that many of them would want, if it did result in lower cost, to have that option to make more registrations before, you know, sunrise periods began in any of the second round TLDs. So that was, but whether, I'm just saying it needs to be looked at if we go that way.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Jeff. I certainly think it's something that should be noted in any recommendation that we put forward, because I think sometimes people forget the practical realities of running a business, and they think that these things can, you know, once they're pronounced, they just take place, and they don't. And I think reminding them that there are practical considerations is a, you know, a duty that we should fulfill. Moving to question 13, I'm not going to read it. It has to do with proportionality of costs and benefits. You see, our recommendation is to table this until we get to the end of the discussion. And I think, you know, there's no, that's sort of a summary question that takes a global view of the entire process, at least with regard, you know, with regard to the trademark clearinghouse, with regards to the RPMs that are associated with it. And I think it's very difficult for us to have a discussion until we're at the end of, and we've evaluated everything that's part of this. So I say we go with this recommendation. Are there any objections? Seeing none, let's move to Category 514. We see here this has to do with the accessibility of the trademark clearinghouse, we see that there's been, you know, there were some concerns, but I think the discussion showed that many times, you know, you don't know if somebody is represented by someone who's in the UK, but they're an American company, or they're a North African company and they're represented by someone in Saudi Arabia. You just don't know. You know where the registrations are coming from because we know who the trademark agents are that are filing those, but that doesn't necessarily align with where the rights holders are and what geos they're from. So I think, you know, we can make a notation to that and put that in, but I think that's, we don't have sufficient data to make determination at this point, and I think we should close this question out. Any disagreement with that? Hearing none, we'll move to 15. Here's one I think that there's been a lot of discussion with regards to the confidentiality of the Trademark Clearinghouse database. And so I think that this is still a very much an open issue based on the plethora of emails that made it through my inbox yesterday. So I have stepped away from my computer for a moment, so I apologize. If someone has a comment, I invite you to make the comment or raise your hand, and if I could ask Mary or someone if they see it to let me know, and I'll acknowledge them. But I think this is an open question that we need to discuss, continue discussions on. Anyone have a comment, disagree with my assessment? Okay, I'm not hearing any. I'm back at my computer. I'll check real quick to see if there's a hand up. I see a hand. Susan Kawaguchi.
Hi, Susan Kawaguchi for the record. You know, I've been giving this a lot of thought, and I've definitely made comments in Copenhagen that I disagreed that it should be open. And so I was thinking about it a lot, and also agree with Brian Beckham and Brian Winterfelt's perspective in their emails they sent out recently. But if you take a look at the TMCH, all of the information that I have entered in on behalf of Facebook and all our subsidiaries is all public information. It can be found elsewhere. But it is a subset of that information. And so my point I made in Copenhagen, in some ways, it is a clue to our strategy for domain registrations in the new TLD program. So that's one point I just wanted to reiterate. But also, if you think about the TMCH in the same way as you would an account, domain name registration account at a registrar, and we use several, all of those domain name registrations are public. You can look them up on Whois. Somebody can figure out, if it takes a little work, can figure out what we've registered and when, and the size of our portfolio. But we don't publicly disclose that. There's a lot of information that could be gleaned from those registrations. No one's requesting for transparency's sake, that I hand over my corporate registrar credentials and allow you to go through and figure it out. To me, the TMCH account is a private corporate account that we use for specific needs, which is only a subset of our actual trademarks. And in the same way that you would not allow the full viewing of our corporate account to see what domain name registrations we own, I do not think the TMCH should be opened up for searching to see what trademarks we feel are the most critical to fulfill our needs in the new GTLDs. So I'm against opening it up. I don't think there's a need for transparency because all these records are already transparent. They're all available publicly.
Thank you, Susan. I see George Kirikos' hand is up, and then Kathy, and then Jeff Newman.
George Kirikos for the transcript. I respectfully disagree with Susan. What I hear from her is that because she chooses to submit only a subset of her trademarks, that one can infer information from that. But isn't that a problem that she's creating by only submitting a subset? So she had the choice to either submit all of them, submit none of them, or submit a subset. And so it's her active choice that led to the inferences. So that's not something that the public should be penalized in terms of limiting access to the public database by her choice of strategy. And so this interacts a bit with the cost argument. If the costs were lower, she could obviously afford to register all of them if she wanted to. Thank you.
Hey, this is J. Scott Evans. Jeff, I'm sorry, Kathy was next.
Great. Thanks, J. Scott. I'm going to make a historic note and some observations, and then an idea for what we might do with this question. So the historic note is that the Trademark Clearinghouse database, when it came out of the STI, was open. When it was approved by the GNSO and by the board, it was an open database. And the reason why, and I've written to another STI member, was that it would be searchable by third parties, it would be transparent, it would allow a level of self-policing by registrants so that they could better understand their trademark notices and maybe even know ahead of time what they were getting into and what goods and services people were protecting so they could avoid them. It was in the implementation, as Mary has circulated several times, both putting into our tables and then circulating, I think, earlier today, the IAG, the implementation team, is what closed it off. What's interesting, though, is that there doesn't seem to have been a debate. There's a lot of discussion about the misuse of the data, but there doesn't appear to have been anyone on that team arguing for the transparency and accountability. So I'm not sure it was balanced. The other thing I wanted to add is I used to program databases on Wall Street, and whether it's open or closed is a design feature, not an implementation detail. So certainly there was no notice to the multi-stakeholder community that this could get closed off kind of as an implementation detail. So I'm surprised to have seen it coming in there. But, Jay Scott, here's an idea is, do we want to actually save evaluation of this question? And I hate to keep kicking the can down the road for things, but after we review the rights protection mechanisms, will we understand better the implications of open or closed after we look at Sunrise and particularly after we look at trademark claims? Thanks.
Well, I think the decision is that this question will remain open and it needs further discussion. I'm going to cut the queue off after Greg. I'm going to allow Jeff and Greg to go because, guys, what I really want to do as we go forward today, I'm trying to get through all these questions, is to make sure whether we need to continue discussions or can we close them out. If we're going to continue discussions, we can do that on another call or we can loop back to that when we get to our agenda today. So I just want to make sure we can get through all these questions. So with that, since Susan got to give her piece, and I respect her for that, and she was allowed to, I'm going to allow Jeff and Greg to give their pieces, and then we're going to cut this discussion off. Jeff.
Thanks, Jay Scott. This is Jeff Freeman. Yep. I was a member of the STI when I was at my past employer, so I was a registry representative. I was also probably one of the founders of the Implementation Assistance Group because there were a number of issues that we realized when we were implementing not just the rights protection mechanisms, but a lot of the other aspects that we needed to. There were certainly some holes in the implementation that from a registry perspective, we just needed clarity on before building our solution. And just to disagree a little bit with Kathy, I actually did. While I was a registry, I was on the other side saying that the database should be open. I was actively arguing that it should be open, but I was convinced by members of the IAG, and it comes out in the report, how we came out because of the arguments raised and because of the fact that when someone did apply for a name, they would get the information back through the claim to see what was in there with respect to their own individual application for a name. So I was an advocate for it being open, but was convinced by others that it would, on balance, be better to be closed and confidential. So we can go through all of those mailing lists if we want. I'm sure the IAG mailing lists were open, and you could find all of these emails. But I don't think that we should go back to the STI necessarily without going through the IAG implementation list as well, because there were real reasons why we came out with why it should be confidential. And I do believe, and I'm trying to remember which open ICAM meeting it was where this topic was actively discussed. And for some reason, I remember, Kurt, I think you were leading the discussion in terms of up from the ICAM side, but I do remember having this discussion. And as Mary says, it was either Dakar or Singapore where this was actively debated. I don't want it to stay on the record that it wasn't debated. It actually was. And all of these facts, even the ones brought up by the EFF, they're not new. They were brought up back then as well. Thanks.
Okay, Greg. And I see that Paul has raised his hand, and I'm serious. After Paul's comment, we're not going to continue on this, okay? If you have any further comments, you can make it to the list after the call. Greg?
Yeah, this is Paul Keating. J. Scott, thank you very much. My only comment was if the only purpose of this call is to go through the questions and to determine whether there are sufficient reasons to continue to kick the can down the road on the question because there's further discussion required, we should keep it at that discussion. To continue to put in your personal opinions about a particular question is killing a lot of time. We only have now 9 more minutes left of this call.
No, as many questions as possible.
90
minute
Thank
call.
You.
Just to be
okay,
clear,
well,
the comment still stays the same.
I think if you could please move things forward faster so that if someone has a personal or comment about a particular point of view about why something's important and why it should be kicked down the road, that's fine. But to debate the individual question, I think, is not the purpose of the phone call today. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Greg, with Paul's comment in hand, I'm going to ask if you don't have something direct to this, if you either put it in the chat or put it on the list, if it's to the substantive discussion, if it has to do when we consider this issue, I welcome your comment.
Thanks, it's Greg. Jeff said most of what I would say anyway. I do think, clearly not the end of this discussion. When and how we discuss it, I think is something we need to deal with down the road.
Agreed.
When we do, I think we should go not just rely on anecdotal recollections of the past, but try to be a little bit more, go back to some of the resources. Thanks.
Okay. I think that's a great idea, and it's incumbent upon us to do that and so that we make an objective evaluation of this. Okay, 16 has to do with the scope of the Trademark Clearinghouse and the protection measures that's come out of those. Again, we have recommended as chairs, and I think you would all agree that that's because it is such a 60,000-foot question that we have to finish our work with regards to Sunrise and Claims Service and circle back to answering this particular question. Do I see? Paul, your hand is still up. I'm assuming that has to do with regards to your prior comment.
No, I'm sorry. I just left my computer, and I don't have the ability
okay.
to put it down.
I just
please put it
wanted
down.
To make
thank
sure.
You,
so
sorry.
If I don't hear
thank
any
you.
Objections,
sorry.
we're going to do this after we do the – okay. So now is our – I can't – let me – I don't have the agenda up. Let me push up in the notes. I see. Now, are we going to go do Category 3, or are we going to go through all of the charter questions today to determine how we proceed? If someone could just help me out quickly. Mary.
Thanks, J. Scott, and thanks, everyone, for the discussion. So I think the idea was to see if we could close off whatever, however many questions from all the categories, including
okay.
1 and 2, but to
okay.
but to make things simple, I think for categories 1 and 2, because we did discuss those in some length earlier on, the basic question there for everyone, as you see in the table, really is whether there's additional whether there's a need for us to develop policy recommendations or to discuss it in additional detail, or if there are actually other concerns, are these more implementation related? So this is something that I think what we would do on the staff side is encourage folks to basically look at those questions again and look at the notes and perhaps respond to the list if they see there's a need to continue.
That's what I was going to suggest so we can move on today is that in Category 1 and 2 at the bottom here, if you all would look through those and to the list, post, whether you think we can close the question, whether you think we need additional information or additional discussion, and let's move on today. So that will just help us move a little bit quicker. Okay. Now, we heard a presentation from Deloitte, and we have asked certain questions with regards to the Trademark Clearinghouse, with regards to especially the treatment of devices. They call them marks, and we're waiting to hear back from them. But now I guess my question is, after seeing that and having time to digest the ICANN 58 presentation from Deloitte, is there anyone that believes that we need additional follow-up or additional information beyond that, that's beyond what's already gone out from Deloitte before we continue? Any comments, concerns, outrage? Okay. Hearing none, it looks like that we're we can deal with that, these questions, once we get in the additional information we've already sent out. It doesn't look like anyone's necessarily requesting or demanding or requiring or wanting or desiring, whatever you want to say, some additional information. George, I see your hand is up.
George Kirkus for the transcript. Just to go back to that other question that we had, we were debating the subset of marks. It would be useful to get from Deloitte the total number of unique companies that have registered marks and a frequency of how many marks per company. So the number of companies, for example, that registered one mark, the number that registered two marks, the number that registered 5,000 marks, et cetera. So if Deloitte has that kind of data, it might be helpful to our discussions. Thanks.
Okay. I don't see any comment. I think that's fine. As long as the information was anonymized, I think that would be fine. I think that, Mary, is that something that you and I could work on, put together a question that we could float to the group, sort of how we ask this question, then send it off to Deloitte, hopefully beginning of next week?
Jay Scott, this is Mary. Yes, I think we can certainly do that. And we were going to follow up with Deloitte anyway on the staff site to ask when we might expect some further response from them. So I think the timing would be excellent.
Okay. Well, then why don't we do that? Paul, I see you've raised your hand. George, I assume you're yours as an old hand, so I'm going to move to Paul.
Hi. Thank you, Jay Scott. This is Paul Keating for the record. Have we asked Deloitte under whether they are under any legal obligations not to disclose the contents of the database? If not, we should ask them that question specifically, because it really doesn't do us very much good to have the debate if they're precluded from responding to it effectively. Should we conclude that, yes, the database should be open and they're precluded by law from opening it? That's rather a silly exercise on all sides. So I would like to ask them specifically for their specific legal position as to the openness or closedness.
Well, that's a great question, Paul. What I would ask are, there's some trademark owners on here, and I'll check with my domain administrator, that can look at their agreement with Deloitte and see if that provision is in their agreement. That would be my first question. Why do we have to go to Deloitte? We've got people on this committee that have contracts with Deloitte.
Yes, but there could be just the simple terms of the agreement could allow Deloitte to disclose the information if otherwise required. For example, there are lots of things. I'd like to hear from both sides. I'm not opposed, Jay Scott, from hearing from the contracting parties on the trademark holder side, but I also want to hear Deloitte's legal position.
Okay. Mary?
I'll take my hand down and go on mute.
Thanks, Jay Scott.
Mary.
And thanks, Paul. This is Mary from staff. So I was just taking a quick look through the description of the Deloitte contract with ICANN, and I haven't seen the contract itself, but I think, as everyone knows, there was a summary document that was published, and that is part of our working group's historical materials. I don't recall a mention of confidentiality there, but I also wanted to note that in the use of the Trademark Clearinghouse, the terms and conditions for that use are published, and I don't recall the details right now, but we do have those materials, and so we can quickly take a look through the terms and conditions for submission and use of the clearinghouse as well.
Great. And then I think we can ask Paul's question. I don't think there's anything to say on the issue of confidentiality. Could you give us, you know, your, is there, are you contractually obligated to maintain the confidentiality of this information? I mean, I don't see anything wrong with asking that. Does anyone oppose us asking that? I just think that's additional data point. Okay, seeing no red X's or having no one screaming at me, I'm going to assume that we can move on. So I think we have, I see the TMCH report is up in the window, but I think what we were supposed to, third item on our agenda, is to look at the revised work plan and talk about subteams for Sunrise and charter claims. Okay, so here we have the revised work plan. You see that we are now past, we are on the 29th of March with a 90-minute call. So I'm going to assume point four into point three, and just as an initial question, you'll notice that we have changed all of the calls to 90-minute calls moving forward. And so I guess I just want to ask, as we look at this, is that acceptable to the group that we move our calls from hour calls to 90-minute calls? Is there any strong objection to that? Okay, hearing none, we will move forward on a 90-minute call basis. But I think you should also understand that there may be calls within that we even expand out to 120 minutes depending on where we are. So, you know, just be aware of that. And the chairs are going to try to have calls together, and we will decide if we're looking for it on the schedule, if something looks like it might need to be 120 minutes, depending on where we are, and we will advise the group accordingly. But just to let you know that that is on the table, and you should be aware that that is something that could occur in the future. But for going forward, it looks like we will have 90-minute calls and so that we can continue with our work. So you see here where we are. You see that we need to start working with the Trademark Clearinghouse Sunrise and Claims Charter questions, and we need to have subteams to do that. So I am open to how we establish those subteams. Do we have an idea about how we want to go about doing that? Do we want to have people self-identify, and then we will I see Kathy Kleiman's hand is up. Kathy?
Hi. Yeah, Kathy Kleiman. J. Scott, I just wanted to mention that I think these are the questions actually for all of the rights protection mechanisms that use the Trademark Clearinghouse. So it would be Sunrise, trademark claims, and we had talked about, and we have questions about private protected marks lists. So I think that that's also one of the things we should be scoping.
Sorry, I missed your...
The protected marks lists, the private protected marks lists. We have questions about those, and those are uses of the Trademark Clearinghouse database. So I think we have at least three.
You're talking about the additional protections that are being offered by registries themselves beyond the mandated protections.
Right, and we have some questions in our charter, and we have other questions that have been raised in public sessions. So I think it's really three categories of kind of uses of the Trademark Clearinghouse. Thank you.
All right. Mary?
Thanks, J. Scott and Kathy. And actually, staff did have a question about that because, as you see on this draft work plan dated yesterday, by previous discussion, the discussion of the, I guess we can call them the private additional voluntary mechanisms that some registry operators are offering, those were slated for discussion after the next ICANN meeting, I want to say end of July. So as Kathy noted, there's obviously some questions within the sunrise and sections of our charter that may bleed into that or may deal with those more specifically. So our assumption as staff was that the sub-teams that are going to be formed this week would be looking at those sunrise and claims charter questions that do not have to do with these additional voluntary protections, and that when the time comes for the group to look at these additional protections, then we would be looking at the mechanisms as well as the charter questions dealing with them. In other words, for now, the sub-teams would be dealing with those sunrise and claims questions that are different or independent of any additional voluntary mechanisms. So we just wanted to check that that is right. And in answer to your earlier question, I thought that we would probably put our call for volunteers on the mailing list after today as well.
Okay. Here's what I suggest, and I am going to jump off of Kathy's comment. I think we should have three groups that are constituted now. One will deal with Sunrise, one will deal with claims, and one will deal with private services offered. And even though the fact we may not get into a robust discussion of that information, they can be gathering information with regards to that during this time so that we don't go through that process again. So my suggestion is we have three sub-teams, Sunrise, claims, and private services, and that we put out a call for those hopefully before the end of the week, and we get volunteers in. I would also request that if you're willing to serve as the chair of one of these sub-teams, if you would indicate that in your expression of interest for serving on one of the teams. Okay. So is there any objection to having three teams constituted and doing a call for volunteers? Greg Shatton,
for the record. With regard to the third proposed sub-team on private services, I'm a little concerned about what the scope of that would be. I think there was general agreement that understanding the full landscape of uses and claim services and RPMs was worthwhile, not just existing in a ICANN bubble, but I don't think there was agreement that this group had any jurisdiction over those services as such, in terms of making comments about whether they're good, bad, indifferent, or whether they should be, changed in any way. So I'm a little concerned with mission creep on this third point. So maybe that can be clarified and my concerns can be alleviated.
Kathy, since you are the one that brought this up, do you want to take that question?
Sure, Kathy Kleiman. We have questions about this, about the private protected marks list, and kind of all uses of the Trademark Clearinghouse are under the purview, as I understand it, of this working group. So it seems appropriate to be dealing with those questions now. I think you're right about scoping all of the subgroups.
That's
a good question. And Jay Scott, do we just want one subgroup so that, because all of these are kind of interrelated questions in some ways, the applications of the database, would one subgroup allow us to kind of move quickly, see the overlaps and or not, and just deal with all of this in one place? Thanks.
Anyone else have any comments? Is anyone else prefer, Paul? Keating.
I'm coming.
Okay.
Sorry. This is Paul Keating for the record. Can you please describe what you believe, Jay Scott, as the scope of each of these three subgroups? I'm having difficulty understanding them.
Here's what
Thank
I was
you.
Going
I'll,
to suggest.
I'll put my hand down.
I was going to suggest that the chairs will provide the groups with a template and allow for them to, the first project will be for them to scope the work and for that then to come back to this group for approval of all of those. and we will provide a template that there will be a scoping document. I think this was some of the concern, and I think we addressed this earlier. Phil sent out a memo about that's the way we would do things, and that would be my suggestion, that once they're identified, staff and the chair, co-chairs will work together to provide a template that will allow scoping to occur, and then that scoping document would be returned to this group for approval, and then the work would begin. Phil, I hope I have not stepped into it or stated something from a poor memory, which is not beyond my scope. Phil?
Yeah, well, speaking of memory, J. Scott, at this point, I don't remember exactly what was in that memo we sent out several months ago. But I generally agree with you. Why don't we let this group, we've determined we know that the availability of the portfolio registry services blocking mechanisms affects use of Sunrise registrations. We know that. We know, and I was surprised to see John Nevis. I thought that the terms that were blocked had to be in the clearinghouse, but we can explore that in the working group. But why don't we let the subgroup, look at what they might look at and bring it back to the full group for discussion rather than engaging in a debate up front about what they should be looking at.
Okay.
That would be much more efficient, I think.
I agree. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to get these three groups. We'll give you a little template that will assist you in scoping. Once the people have been identified, then that will come back to this group. We will agree that the scope is appropriate, and then we will allow the groups to do their work. I just think that's the most efficient way to get this done. If somebody can take me back to the agenda on the right rail, because I can't see it. And in the meantime, Mary, if you would make your comment. I see your hand is raised.
Yes, it is, J. Scott. This is Mary from staff again. So this is really just a note, and we will send out action items and a call for volunteers to the full mailing list since we don't have everybody on this call. But just a note that typically sub-teams work concurrently with the full working group. So if you're joining a sub-team or more than one sub-team, we feel we ought to note that likely means that you will be on not just a full working group call, but one or more sub-team calls during the same week. We'd also note further that if we stick to this work plan that we have displayed in Adobe Connect, then the Sunrise and Claim sub-teams would be under more time pressure than the ones dealing with the private protection, since that is coming up later. So we just wanted to set the expectations correctly, and if folks want to do things differently, that's fine as well.
Well, here's something that I've thrown out before, and I'll throw out again. Does it not make sense, since we have sub-teams working, that we start doing alternate week calls? So on week A, sub-teams meet. On week B, sub-teams meet with the full group, and they report out their work, and we have a robust discussion with the whole group. Then we go to an A schedule where it's just sub-teams. That way, they take our slot. They're meeting in our slot at our time for 90 minutes on the alternative week, and every other week we meet, and we coalesce the work they've done, and we move this forward. That's the way I've done it when I've chaired other times we've had sub-teams. It is more efficient with regards to people's time. It's already on everyone's schedule, and it allows us to keep things moving forward because there's a deliverable for discussion with the whole group at the second week. I just think that would help us move things along faster because I'm not sure what the whole group's going to be doing while we're waiting around for these sub-teams to deliver us the work that they're scoped to do. Mary.
Thanks, J. Scott, and I agree. I think that is a very efficient use of time. I think others agree as well as Steve does in Adobe. I think from the staff side, what we would want to do is go back and look at this work plan. I think our immediate concern is that we have some trademark clearinghouse, just kind of structural questions that we've been tabling. And depending on when Deloitte comes back with that, we might still need to do some concurrent calls for a couple or a few weeks, but to the extent
that's fine.
We can certainly adjust, although you suggested.
Okay, I just think that I've used that on about six working groups that I've done at ICANN. It's been pretty efficient, And I suggest that we do that. And in the event we get this information back, we'll give you a week's warning that on the next week there will be, you know, double calls because we're going to consider the information from Deloitte and have a full committee call. But I just think that's the way we have to do it. It's going to take some time management and some co-chairs. And my co-chairs have been excellent about getting together, working together well, and doing everything we can to move things forward, giving everyone schedules, travel schedules, et cetera, et cetera. So I think I feel pretty positive with the excellent staff support we've been receiving. We can get this done. So we've already agreed on the 90-minute calls. I think we've agreed that we're going to send out a call for three teams. So now we're down to point five, which is a confirm the appropriate day of the week for the fourth rotational meeting with a time of 3 o'clock UTC. Mary, would you just refresh everyone's memory with what we're considering here? I think this was a suggestion that was made by Kathy based on some concerns she had with other working groups, perhaps, that were meeting and are people in APAC. So if you could just refresh us on what we're considering here so that everyone knows what's going on.
Certainly, Jay Scott, and hi, everyone. This is Mary again. I think because we have moved the time for this fourth rotating call, as you noted, Jay Scott, because that is probably the most friendly time for our participants in the Asia-Pacific time zone. That call is at 0300 UTC, so typically what that means is that we keep it on the same day as UTC. The difficulty is that for other participants, say in North America, that actually makes it Tuesday night instead of Wednesday night, and I'm sure folks will correct me if I'm getting my days and times wrong. So the suggestion was that it instead of it being Wednesday, 0300 UTC, which would be Tuesday night for folks in North America and elsewhere, we make it Thursday, 0300 UTC, just for that fourth rotating call so that for folks in other time zones, the call would always be on a Wednesday, whether that's early on a Wednesday or on a Wednesday night. And I don't see anyone correcting me, so I assume I got that right.
Okay. Well, I've just been reminded by Mike Rodenbaugh in the chat box that we probably shouldn't make any decisions with regards to the length or duration of the calls and or this question without putting it to the full mailing list because there are people who aren't here who will be affected by this. So I suggest that we do – I think George is suggesting, Kirikos, that perhaps we do a poll. So is there any way, Mary, we could do a poll with regards to those particular questions with regards to extending the calls to 90 minutes and the day for the fourth rotational call? I see your hand is up, but you're muted. Okay, here you are.
Hi. Yeah, sorry, I hit the wrong thing on my keyboard. Yes, we certainly can do a very quick poll for those questions, and we will have that sent out to everybody by the end of the week.
Okay. All right. So I think that brings us to the end of our agenda. I don't see here a notation for any other business, but I will ask that question if anyone has any other business that they would like to bring forward at this particular time. Hearing none, I'm going to thank everybody for their time and attention today. I appreciate that. And to all those in Copenhagen who spent 4.5 hours discussing, listening to presentations, and pulling us forward to the point we are today, I want to extend my thanks. I'm sorry I couldn't be there. So with that, I'm going to bring this meeting to a close. We will be sending out, as we said earlier, a call for the three sub-teams. We will also, once those are constituted, be sending out a template that will assist in a scoping mechanism, and we will have a poll going out to everyone regarding to the time of our weekly calls, as also with regards to the appropriate day of the week for the fourth rotational meeting. Ciao, everyone.